Thank you for tuning in to the Essential Church Podcast, a church where we focus on restoration over denomination. If you're in the Virginia Beach area and would like to find out more about Essential Church, visit our webpage at essentialchurch.com.
So that little mini movie was actually a commercial created by a company called TBC, a life insurance company in Thailand. They did something unique with that ad campaign. They didn't create that ad campaign for TV. They really just created it for internet. And it worked very successfully. It's been considered, even in America, now this is funny, it's a company from Thailand, but even in America, it won, basically it's been considered the most inspirational TV ad of all time. And on YouTube, it's received over 26 million views by an English audience, by people in America who have no need for Taiwanese? Is that right? Okay. Thailandese? No, Thailandese. No, it's not, Taiwan's different coming than Thailand. Anyways, I don't know. I'm on 3 hours sleep. I drove back from Florida last night. So you know what you're going to get. You think about it, though, so inspirational, yet we don't even care about the product. It just hits you. And here's what stood out to me with that. As I watched it, I couldn't help but think, that's what we miss when we read the Bible and we look at Jesus. Because, you know, people who were nothing like Jesus loved to be around him. And we read the Bible, and we read it, we really just kind of read it as far as what Jesus taught and what he said and things like that. We really kind of miss who he was. I mean, that's the thing that we kind of always overlook. And that's why I think there's a disconnect between who we are as a church and who Jesus was. I think we get down the teaching of Jesus and the message of Jesus, but what I think we miss is that. Like, I think if you were to be around Jesus, I think that's what he would be like. I mean, every one of you watches that, and even the worship team who got to see it like 2-3 times during our run-throughs this morning, they're like, wow, real tear-jerker this morning. And really, I mean, I don't think we've seen a tear-jerking ad in America since the old AT&T MCI Reach Out and Touch Someone commercials. Remember those? Yeah. Anyways, sorry. But when you think about it, that's who Jesus was. And that's why people loved to be around. I mean, who wouldn't want to be? I mean, you don't even know the guy, but do you want to be his friend? Like, do you want to live in the world that he lives in? I mean, that's just, you kind of look at that and say, how many of y'all look at that and go, I want to be that person? Got half quiet. Some of you are like, well, yeah, but I know me, and I don't have that kind of time. And that's really what we're going to be looking at this morning is if we're going to truly be Christ, if we're going to truly represent Christ in the world, then we have to do more than just teach what he taught and say what he said. We really need to be like him. And to be like him, you need to see that picture, that portrait needs to be in your mind, because that's what people saw when they saw Christ. And the disconnect we have in the 21st century now is, at least in our own city, is that both where this church is located now and where we're looking to have a second campus at in town center this next year, in those two areas of our city, 7 out of 10 people are not connected to a church. Which tells me this, is it fair to say that I think everybody in the city would love to be around that guy? But why is it that 70% of the city doesn't love to be around the church? And when I see that, we have to say there's something different than between the kind of person Jesus was and who we are as a church in the 21st century. And so I don't necessarily say that to shame us. Really, the goal of this series is to sort of inspire us to move and sort of capture those it factors, those things we miss when all we do is just look at the words of Jesus and not really look at the person of Jesus. And that's kind of, I think that picture, that video right there, I think summarizes it best of anything in this series, is that thing was not about him getting in there teaching to be a kind person. You just saw it and you were moved. And people saw Jesus and they were moved because that's the kind of person he was. He always had time for people. He always invested in people. He hung out with lepers and nobody hung out with lepers. And he spent time with tax collectors. Nobody spent time with tax collectors. And he always had time to go over their house and hang out with them and do things with them. And it seems like as if there was nobody in the world was an inconvenience for him, kind of. And I say kind of because I'm going to start with a little story out of Mark chapter 1 where there's a situation where you can sort of see that Jesus was a lot like you and me. The difference was is he was like that more than he was like the way we handle the situation. And there was a time, see, we get this picture, though, of Jesus is that he's never inconvenienced. Like everything, he's always like just out looking. He has nothing to do all day anyway. He's only got one thing to do in his 30 some odd years and just kind of sits around, waits for that to happen. So he's got all kinds of free time. But it really wasn't, it may sound crass, but it really wasn't like that. He actually had places to go, things to do, and he actually kind of had an agenda. And sometimes people in their needs mess up their agenda. Anybody with me on that? People in their needs sort of mess up our agenda. And that happens in Mark chapter 1. It says, a man with leprosy came and he begged him on his knees, came to Jesus and begged him on his knees, if you are willing, you can make me clean. And now it says, Jesus was filled with compassion. Now, what's interesting is some of your translations translate this word compassion, and some translations translate it as Jesus was indignant. And you're thinking, wow, that's two variant readings. That's two really far end of the spectrums. The word is to be gutturally moved, sort of like moved in your gut. And it's sort of, is he kind of like, ugh? Because that's kind of how we feel when there's like, when you've got an agenda and somebody's got a need, you have one of two guttural, it's a guttural response. It isn't like, oh, not again. Like, just picture now it's like somebody you love, like one of your kids, and you're late for a meeting, and you're going to take your kids to work, and your kid comes down and goes, I can't find my shoe. What do you do? Oh, indignant, right? Okay? It's that sort of guttural response. But there's also a guttural response, which is moved with compassion. You know, like the little girl in there who needs an education, and when you saw her come out and say, Mom, and she's got on the uniform, how many of y'all just were like moved in that moment? See, move. It was a guttural move. Now, those of you who weren't, you don't have a soul. You are like the Grinch, and your heart needs to grow a few sizes, okay? So you may have been gutturally moved at that moment when you saw the little girl who had an opportunity to go to school. And so the word is about a guttural movement, a guttural something. And the question is he indignant or is it a compassion moment? And you think it might be easy to tell, but it's really not once I read the rest of the story to you. So what happens, it says he reached out his hand and he touched the man and says, I am willing, be clean. And immediately the leprosy left him and he was cleansed. So you're thinking, well, obviously he was moved with the like little girl kind of compassion. Well, not exactly. Here's what it says. Jesus sent him away at once with a strong warning. See that you don't tell anybody about this. Just go show yourself to the priest and do the sacrifices that Moses commanded for your cleansing as a testimony to them. In other words, I know in order for you to be accepted back in the community to go home, you've got to first go to the priest. So, okay, go do that. Don't tell them how it happened. Just go and show them and just show up that you're cleansed. Okay? And instead, he went back and told everybody. And you can't blame him. I mean, if you're cured of leprosy, people are going to ask. It's kind of like when you lose weight, everybody wants to know how it happened, right? Wow, what did you do? And you're always like, I ate less and exercised more? Because everybody wants like some sort of story how, oh, I discovered the hidden power of kiwi fruit seeds. And I've been smushing them up. And here's the thing. I eat duck donuts for breakfast. I eat a meatball sub for lunch. But I crush up these kiwi seeds and the pounds just melt away. Like, we're looking for that sort of moment, and that's why we always ask. Well, when somebody, like, gets cured of leprosy, you're asking, right? Because you want to know, how did this happen? And they ask him, and instead of him just being like, don't worry about it, I'm clean. No, he goes and tells everybody about Jesus doing this. Now, here's the problem with this. Now, you might think, doesn't Jesus want everybody to know he's Jesus? Not exactly at this point. You see, the issue is these people had a preconceived notion of what the Messiah would be, okay? They had like a whole agenda of who he would be and kind of had, you know, like the Lone Ranger idea of him or, you know, like I would think right now, I think if you actually met George Washington, you'd probably be disappointed. Ride with me on this. Because, I mean, we've got monuments to him, we got him on our quarters, on our bills, everything. I think if you met him, like, you'd probably be let down because you have like this image of George Washington, right? Well, they had this image of what the Messiah would be like. And Jesus wanted to have the opportunity to define himself instead of having everybody else define him. And he wanted to have the opportunity to sort of live and enjoy life for a while, okay? Because what happens next, it says, as a result, because this guy went and blabbed his mouth and wouldn't shut up about it, it says, as a result, Jesus could no longer enter a town openly, but stayed outside in the lonely places. And yet people still came and found him. You see, what you have at the beginning of the story is you have the leper who has to be on the outskirts of town. He's not allowed in the city because he has leprosy. And Jesus, when he heals him, he knows that in healing him, he's going to end up trading places with him. And now Jesus can't walk freely in the city because people are going to mob him. Anybody see the article just this past week about President Obama taking a stroll through Central Park? In there, he says it's something he's wanted to do for a long time, but Secret Service would never allow him to do it. Because when you're president, you can't just walk through Central Park. And so sometimes you think about, oh, how awesome would it be to be president? But you also have to realize it comes with a sacrifice. Like many years ago, Michael Jordan was on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, and he was asking, what's it like being Michael Jordan? He says, well, it has its downsides too. I can't order a pizza. And so he says, what do you mean? He says, well, nobody will deliver a pizza to Michael Jordan. And so they pulled out a phone and he called up a pizza place, ordered a pizza and said, yeah, this is Michael Jordan. They just hung up on him. See, he's like, see, I can't order a pizza. You can't do that kind of thing. And that's sort of what Jesus is going through. He knew if he heals this guy of leprosy, word's going to get out. They're going to come and try to impute things on him that he doesn't really want imputed on him. He wants to be able to define himself for himself, not have everybody else define him. And he also just wants some time just to sort of be a guy, which you can get that, just to be around people. And just, you can't see humanity anymore when everybody's coming at you for stuff, right? It's just, that's what happens. And so he tells the guy, listen, don't tell anybody. Now, going back up, when it says the guy's begging him to be healed, is he indignant, like, sense of like, oh. It's like, I know I'm going to do this because I'm Jesus, but darn it, I just sometimes don't like being Jesus. You know what I'm saying? I mean, take that the right way, okay? It just, like, picture, if you will, let's just say I gave you an assignment. Wouldn't be a bad assignment. Let's just say I gave you an assignment where on Monday, tomorrow morning, tomorrow, all day, you have to help anybody who's in need, anywhere you see them, okay? But in order to do this, you're going to need to leave yourself a little bit of margin, so you got to leave the house 3 hours earlier than you normally would leave for work, so you have extra time all day long to help anybody in need. Now, as you're driving home, is there going to be a piece of you that really hopes you don't see somebody with a flat tire on the side of the road? That's where Jesus is at, okay? Not saying he's not loving and compassionate. It's just he knows what it's going to cost him in that moment. He's going to do it. He's going to do it because he's Jesus, but he knows the cost. He knows exactly what's going to happen when he heals this guy. So he's filled with compassion, yet at the same time, he's kind of like, oh. And that's him. And the thing is, that's what people loved about him because he was like that guy in the movie. And now, I will say, before I get into the right where to go next, last service, I forgot to even mention what the ant was all about. I'm going to explain it really quick and then just move right on. The ant is a symbol of this because in an ant colony, every ant has its job. I mean, some of them are there tending to the queen, some are tending to the eggs, some of them are tending to the little mound, some of them are out foraging for food. Everybody has their assigned task. However, whenever something interesting happens in the nest, or if you would call it, they all immediately switch jobs and take care of that issue. For instance, let's just say, like in Florida, we have these big ant piles. And so let's just say one of your kids goes out there, and it's really fun to kick the ant pile over. And because when you kick it over, you see like all of the, you see the way that they've carved out the dirt? Anybody with me on that? Like you see like, it looks like a sponge underground. So it's kind of neat just to go like that real quick and wipe it. And maybe it sounds mean. I don't know. Well, when that happens, ants don't sit around and go, I'm a forager. I'm out looking for food. I'll just wait here till y'all fix it. No, instantly, all of the ants in the pile scramble out to take care of the immediate need. Or like if you leave a hot dog out on the table, it's all hands on deck to get that hot dog back in the nest before anybody else can see it, right? It doesn't matter what your job is. They go get the whole nest out and take care of it. So that's what ants do is they see a need and they meet it. And the thing about ants is, they're so little, but they make a huge impact. I mean, they can do tons of stuff, just a little ant. And so that's sort of like the picture of this little things make a big difference sort of idea and notion. And just no job too small. They just go after it and do it and take care of it. And that's who Jesus was. There was nothing that would keep him from doing something to help. That's who Jesus was. And he tells a story about this when somebody asks him about what it means to really love and what's it really mean to be a Christian. And what happens is in Luke chapter 10, this expert in the law comes up and he asks Jesus, what's the greatest commandment? What must I do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus says, well, what's the law say? How do you read it? And the guy says back, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. We're in Luke chapter 10, verse 25, by the way. It says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. And he says back, you've answered correctly. Now do this and you will live. Now there's a lot to what's going on there that we sort of mix in our modern day. What's happening here actually is back about 50 years before Jesus came, there were two leading rabbis, Hillel and Shammai. And these guys would debate all these different kinds of things. And there's actually, they've looked through the scriptures and found that Jesus kind of weighs in on these great debates about 9 times. 8 of those times he sides with Hillel, and 1 of the times he sides with Shammai on their interpretation of things. And so a lot of times when people are coming to Jesus asking him questions, they're really asking him to weigh in on these classic debates that these two great Jewish rabbis had. One of the major debates these two rabbis had is, what is the second greatest commandment? Okay, one of them, because they all agreed that the hear, O Lord, your God, is one God. You shall love him with all your heart, soul, and mind. That's Deuteronomy 6. They all agreed that was the number one commandment. The question then was, what's the number two commandment? And Hillel said, well, Leviticus 19:18 says to love your neighbor as yourself. And so that's what this guy says. He basically says, well, we all know the most important thing is love God. And I believe the number two thing is love your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus says, you've answered correctly. So Jesus is now siding with Hillel in this moment. Now, on the Shammai side of things, they believe that the second greatest commandment was to be holy, just as I, the Lord your God, am holy. That's a command we see in the Old Testament as well as over in the New Testament. So both of these show up in both, so they're both important. So the question is what's more important, being holy or loving people? And so that's going to come up to play here in a little bit. You just kind of need to know that background. So this guy says, I'm on the Hillel side, and it's to love your neighbor. And Jesus says, you've answered correctly, now go do it. See, there's one thing to have the right teaching and the right theology. It's a difference to actually go do it. What we've been saying in this series is, I don't think the reason why 7 out of 10 people in our city aren't a part of or connected to a church, I don't think the reason is because we're not teaching what Jesus taught. I don't think it's an issue of, do we know what's really the most important thing or not, kind of thing. I think it's because it's the doing part of it. I think it's because we're not doing what we saw in that video of the man from Thailand who just lived out what Jesus did. And so Jesus is saying, listen, yeah, go do what the guy in the life insurance video did. That's really what he's saying. And the guy says, okay, hang on. We're not done with this yet. Just who is my neighbor? He says, now wanting to justify himself, he says, just who is my neighbor? And you see, if you go back to Leviticus 19:18, what you'll see in Leviticus 19:18, where this quote comes from, it says, do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against anyone among your people, but love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. Now notice right before he says, love your neighbor as yourself, it says, among your people. So they took that as, love your neighbor as yourself. Who's my neighbor? Those who are among my people. So I am limited as to actually who I have to help as far as who is among my people. Then the question is, well, who is really among my people? Is this just talking about fellow Israelites? Or is this just talking about the people who are within the class system of the Israelites that I'm in? Or talking about just the people who are within the tribe of the Israelites in which I am in? Really just who is the among my people? Wanting to justify himself. Basically what he's wanting to say is, you see, I can love my neighbor as I love myself if I create a really small, narrow subset of people that is my neighbor, right? Like, for instance, we're all doing this, I would assume, if we can just limit that to, like, our family and, like, our best friend, right? I'm golden. Or sometimes people say, well, love my neighbor. That means on the street I live on, people live on this side, people live on this side, and that's it. For some of you, that's a lot easier than it is for others, depending on what neighborhood you live in and who's on your street. So really, we're looking for a good subset which can make me pat myself on the back and say, I'm all good, I can move on to the next thing Jesus asked me to do. And Jesus says, okay, you're wondering kind of like, what is the subset for which you're required to? In other words, who is it you have to focus on? As if the opportunity to help is about a person you're helping and not about the person who's doing the helping. So that's where he goes next. He says, okay, well, let me tell you a story. There was a man who was going from Jerusalem to Jericho. When he was attacked by robbers, they stripped him of his clothes, they beat him and went away and left him half dead. Now, the key to this part of the story is that he just says a man. Well, what kind of man? Is he part of the upper class, part of the lower class? What tribe is he in? Is he one of our people, one of not our people? He doesn't tell. And then makes matters more complicated. He says he was stripped of his clothes. Now, the two ways you could tell who somebody was or get a clue on them in their daytime was kind of like it is today. You listened for their accent, and you looked for where they were dressed. That's why, if you remember, a little side note, a little tangent, I always love going on these tangents. When Peter's hanging out there, like wanting to kind of check out and see what's going on with Jesus during the pre-trial before his death, they walk up to him and say, aren't you one of the Galileans with him? It's because of the way he dressed and the way that he talked. They could just tell. In the same way, you can tell when people are from Georgia, and you can tell when they're from Wisconsin, and you can tell when they're from New York, right? You know, you know. And also, by the way that they're dressed, you can sort of tell a little bit about them. It's like, I laugh, but with all of you who's in the military, I don't even have to ask what you do in the military. I can pretty much guess just by looking at you, just because you all dress a certain way, fitting with the community which you're in. I guess I'm not the only one. Like, For instance, I can tell by the way you drink coffee if you're a chief. I mean, you guys are really good at it, right? You know, you just, you make your thing and you just, you're at home with that, right? You know, just saying, just I'm moving on. So what he does, I digress. So what he's saying here is, listen, he is taking away all of the ways that you would know who this guy is. So if the classification is all about, I help those who are my neighbor and I got to know if this guy one of my neighbors or not, what happens, Jesus is basically saying, what happens if you got a guy and you don't know anything about him? What do we do then? Because we don't know anything about the guy and he doesn't have clothes on to identify himself. So he says, so three people come along. Now in this setting, now this is a, I would keep on wanting to say fictional because that sounds kind of like a good word, but it's really not a word, right? It's a fictitious story. But doesn't fictitional sound good? Yes? Yes? All you English teachers are like, no. All you who hated English are like, yeah, sounds good. Use it, right? If enough people use it, it becomes a word. Did you know that? That's all you have to do to make a word. If enough people use it, because words have usage, not meaning. Side point for etymology. Moving on. All right, getting back to the story. So it's a fictitious story. However, Jesus is sort of capturing a scene that's plausible, that they would understand, that they would know. So these aren't real people, but the setting was such that they got it. And they could see it happening because it was a legit story, like as if this is the very kind of thing could have happened. And so he's talking about a journey from Jerusalem to Jericho, about 17 miles apart, about 3,400 feet difference in elevation. So we're talking about a steep drop from one to the other. And these two groups of people that passed by first, the priest and the Levite, many of them lived in Jericho but worked in Jerusalem. And what they would do is they'd do 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, kind of like oil rig guys do. And so it worked out great because they could just focus on work when they were at work, and then when they're home, they could just focus on home when they were at home. And so that's part of the way it worked out. So what he's basically picturing here is this guy gets left for dead on this path along the way, and guys are basically getting off work for their 2 weeks is sort of the picture here. And so the first that would come along would be a priest, and he'd be a member of the upper class. Most likely he is riding on something as he comes along the path because they would ride, not walk, on a 17-mile journey. And so when the priest comes up riding on his horse or donkey, whatever it is, he looks down and he sees the guy and he decides he's going to just drive on, so to speak. And the why question there is you have to understand what's going on with the priest. Well, the priest keeps himself ceremonially clean. And so he's at the temple, he's serving the temple. And when he leaves the temple, he does everything he can to keep himself ceremonially clean and considered holy. So when he comes back to the temple, he can just resume his temple duties on the day he comes back, okay? Now, if he gets defiled in any way, if he does something that would make him ceremonially unclean, he either has to go, either has to live with that uncleanliness in his life for his whole 2 weeks that he's off, and then come back a few days earlier to cleanse himself so he'd be ready for work. Or he's got to turn around and go back to Jerusalem, to the temple, to this place in the temple, which is sectioned off just for priests who've been naughty, who've done something to get themselves unclean, and go there to do the ritual purifications. Now, the other priests notice you going into the naughty zone and are wondering, I wonder what Rabbi Shlumi's been up to. I don't know. You know, there was that girl at temple the other day looking at him. I wonder. I don't know. I don't know if he's... And so what would happen is you would have to go and be embarrassed because I wasn't able to keep myself clean. You know what it is about sin. I just have a gravitational pull towards it. So everybody else kept themselves clean, but here I am over here in the loser's box or the naughty bin, whatever you want to call it. Basically, you're only over there if you've done something to get yourself unclean. And now remember, if you were part of the school of Shammai, which believed the second greatest commandment was to keep yourself holy, all the more so over here are they going to be, the second greatest commandment is to keep myself holy. And so for a moment, this guy's sort of justifying himself, and he's riding along with the story. Like, Jesus is like reeling this guy in, right? He's just reeling him in with the story, getting him along. Oh, yeah. The priest who believes the way the Shammai believes, he's in the wrong because that guy stepped over him because he believes holiness is the second greatest commandment, so he's not going to do it based on holiness. You getting this? So he's kind of sucking this guy in. He's setting him up, though. And then he says a Levite comes along. Now, Levite was like a groundskeeper or a security guard at the temple. Of the same tribe, same family group as the priest, but they weren't of the upper class. They were just a regular class guy, and they would be like a maintenance guy at the priest. Only Levites could serve in the temple as in his roles. So he comes along, most likely walking, because he wouldn't be riding with like an upper class person would. So he's walking, and he comes to the guy, and he also goes around. Now, when it says he goes, when they pass by on the other side, like my mind in 21st century, I'm picturing like, I-85, 75, going through downtown Atlanta where there's 10 lanes, and you see that thing, and you just kind of pass by on the far right lane. No, picture more like the Appalachian Trail. That's sort of what this path is like. We're talking something only 2-3 feet wide. And so to pass by, you probably are stepping over this guy in the process. So much more intimate even than the guy riding on a horse going by. He just steps over. And why he does this, it doesn't really say. It could be because perhaps he saw the priest do it before him. It could be simply because he doesn't want to go to the naughty bin either. It just wasn't worth the inconvenience, bottom line, for either of these two guys. And so they move on. Now, here's what he's been reeling this guy in. I mean, he's just, you know, he's got him on the line, and this guy's like, yeah, I answered the question correctly. I said, love God, love your neighbor. These are two people from the other school of thought who care more about holiness than loving their neighbor, so they're not obviously out of it. And then the guy says, but then a Samaritan came along. And that's where the hook was. That's where it was like, Jesus loved to set people up and then flip the story, okay? So he flips the story right here because the Samaritans were hated. We don't have racial hatred the way that they had racial hatred in that day. I'm serious. We don't. I mean, you can go back to the, 50, 60 years ago in this country, and it gets close to the racial hatred they kind of had. If you'll notice at the end, when Jesus says, you know, who is the neighbor, and the right answer is Samaritan, the guy can't even say Samaritan. He just goes, the guy who helped. He can't even say that group or classification. We denote our racial issues because of the words we call somebody. They wouldn't even call them a word because that was even too honoring just to give them a name. So they would just say those people, kind of as close as they would get. You see what I'm saying? It was that kind of hatred. So he reels him in. He says, okay, but there's this Samaritan guy who doesn't feel inconvenienced by the situation. And he stops and he gets off his ride and he goes to help the guy and he bandages him up and he puts him on the donkey. And by the way, to do that and then to walk. So if you are on a donkey, you are a member of the upper class. If you have a ride, usually you're part of an upper class. And so to walk an animal though meant you would be a slave or a servant. And so what he's actually doing is he's putting the guy, we don't know who he is, on his ride in a position of nobility, and he is taking on the role of a servant or a slave and walking him to care. So this is the gospel in action. I mean, this is a picture of Jesus in action right here. So he takes him, he bandages up his wounds, and then he goes on. And sometimes we read this story and we think to ourselves, I've heard this taught. I think I probably have taught it as well, but I won't acknowledge that because I don't like to make myself look bad. So we kind of teach the priest had somewhere to go and the Levite had somewhere to go, but the Samaritan, he had time on his hands. And that's why he was able to help, because he had the margin in his time. But the story, Jesus makes a point to say, he obviously had somewhere he had to go. Because remember, he bandages up the wounds and then he says to the innkeeper, listen, I got somewhere I got to be, all right? Here, I'm going to give you some money. I'll be back after I go do the stuff I got to do, then I'll be back. So clearly, he had somewhere he had to be, just like the other guys had somewhere to be. The difference, though, was he was okay with being inconvenienced. And that's one of the keys to this whole idea of taking the initiative and serving and doing something, because it's so inconvenient to help, isn't it? I mean, it's just inconvenient. It's not what I had planned today. And you say that when it comes to your kids, like, oh, I didn't have time for this today. Why? And that's the way every need is. We don't plan time in our day for needs. And the question is, are you willing to be inconvenienced by what's inconvenienced to them? Now, see, would it be fair to say that the guy who was walking along the road from Jerusalem to Jericho had an inconvenient day? Would you say he had, as maybe Alexander would describe, a horrible, no good, very bad day? That's kind of his day as he's being left for dead. It wasn't part of his plans. He probably had somewhere he had to be too. It's a fictional story. I understand that. But let's just say he probably had somewhere he had to be. That's why he was going along the road to begin with, right? So the question then is, for these three guys, which one of them is going to join this guy in the inconvenience of the day? Because this guy's already been inconvenienced. And you see, I think about that when I think about, like, you see somebody who has a disability or an injury, and there's sort of two frames of thought. One is, stinks to be you, and you just kind of walk on, right? I mean, that's, okay, I'm the only one who's ever had that thought. Y'all got real quiet, like, you're on your own. I ain't acknowledging that one. Mm-mm. No, I'm in church. I help people. I do good things. You can either acknowledge or you can walk by like, that's a bummer. You see, to acknowledge and to join them in the inconvenience is to live with them in that. You know, they're walking slow up to the door and you walk slow with them up to the door. It takes them a while to order their food, and so you are there with them and patiently wait as they order the food, because instead of thinking to yourselves, man, this person's really slowing down my day in the Starbucks line because they can't figure out what they want. By the way, did you realize there's 180,000 possibilities in Starbucks of what you could order? Now take somebody who struggled getting through high school, or somebody who's in special needs, and they've got to get up there and figure out what to order. Not easy, especially if this is their first visit. And the back and behind them, what are you thinking? I got somewhere I got to be. And for just a moment, you have to ask yourself, what would it be like to be going through life like they are? And so sometimes just doing nothing and being patient and loving towards that person is just joining them in the inconvenient life that they're living. And that's what serving is. It's joining somebody else in the inconvenience of the moment. Because they're inconvenienced, and so you go and help them. They're struggling, and so you struggle along with them. Their day has been thrown off, and you join them, and your day is thrown off. This guy has leprosy, and he's not able to go into the towns. And what does Jesus do? He joins him in the inconvenience. As a matter of fact, he takes on his inconvenience and lets him go free. It'd be like you saying, this is a big mess. You don't have time to clean it up. I'll do it for you. You're taking on the inconvenience. Then there's the other side of it is where he looks back to the guy and he says, so who was the neighbor? And the guy says, well, the guy who helped. And you see, Jesus flips it around from what's the subset of people that's a part of my job description to are you the kind of person who just sees everything as a part of your job description? There's no subset because of the kind of person you are. And if you ever worked with somebody who says the phrase over and over again, that ain't my job description. Anybody have that kind of coworker ever? I know I have. I'll never forget her. I mean, I say jokingly, there's little picture memes that come out, you know, with the rodent that's been killed in the road and the guy's restriping the street. And what's he do? He drives around it. And the caption is, not in my job description. And you see, sometimes when it comes to these serving opportunities, we look at it and we go, not in my job description. And see, sometimes it's just a little thing. I'll even go really, really petty small. You're walking in church and you see somebody who's kind of got that look in their eyes like, I'm overwhelmed. I don't know where I'm at. I don't even know where to go. I've got kids and what's going on here? Ooh, coffee, but where do I go? You've got a couple options in that moment. One is the it's not my job description approach, and you're going to do one of two things there. You're going to look back and go, man, I wonder how long it'll take the greeters to find her. Yep, look, they're over there talking. They don't even pay attention, man. You know, they need to do better training for the greeters. You know, they're over there thinking bulletins are more important, but really there's some people right here who need some help. Oh, now she finally saw it. Okay. Way to go. Or you can go, I remember what that was like. And you walk right on, right? One of those two things. But really, just here's the thing. You know where the bathrooms are. You know where the worship centers. You know where the kids go. Those are about the only three questions any visitor ever really wants to know anyway. They're not going to ask you, yeah, did Adam have a belly button? That's not the question they're wondering when they're looking around the room, okay? They're just wanting to know something very simple. And so you can just stop and go, hey, you kind of got that look on your face that I had a few times when I first showed up here. What are you looking for? And so you just pause and to help them out and let them know where to go, or like you see trash on the floor, not just like in the foyer, but in the bathroom. That's where it always happens, right? You look at the trash on the floor and you go, oh, I'm sure they got somebody who does that. But you also are very big on the holiness side of thing of, I put my trash away, but you would not believe what other people in this church have done. I noticed it. I saw it. I am holy, just like the Lord is holy, but some of these other people aren't, right? Or you can just humble yourself and you pick up the paper towels and you throw them in, right? What do you do in that moment? Not in my job description, or are you the kind of person that there is no job too small? Whatever it is, I'll do it. Because, you know, the little things make a big difference. And just like an ant who doesn't look at everything and go, wow, little Timmy knocked over the nest again. I'll be hanging out here munching on the hot dog till you guys are ready with the house. No, they drop what they're doing and they help out. And little things make a big difference. And the thing that people loved about Jesus, he always had time for him. He always made the time. And there was no need that he wouldn't stop to help out with. It's just who he was. And it's what people loved about him. And if we're going to be like Christ, we need to do the same. It's a quote I forgot to mention, which I got to share because it's just too good. One of the guys who was the former editor of National Lampoon magazine said something very profound. He says, we all want to change the world, but nobody wants to help mom with the dishes. Some amens in the room came up on that one. And it's true because we look to God as though God's got these great big things he wants us to do. And that's what we're looking for. And he's like, no, it's are you willing to be inconvenienced? Are you willing to be the kind of person who's there to help? Because that's who his son was. And the thing about Jesus is it didn't seem like as if he ever had anywhere he had to go half the time. Because he created so much margin. There was one place, though, he did have to go. He had an appointment with, and he didn't miss, and he left in plenty of time. I think in Luke chapter 9, he leaves to head towards Jerusalem so he can pay for your sins. That was an appointment he had on the calendar, and he left himself plenty of time. Like Luke chapter 9, he leaves. He sets his gaze towards Jerusalem. He's headed there, but he does all kinds of things along the way. He leaves himself plenty of time, plenty of margin in the day just to show love and compassion on anybody who needs it. But he's got that appointment set for the very specific purpose, because one day you'd be sitting here in need of grace and forgiveness. And one day you'd be sitting here wondering what this table is all about and what it represents. And it simply represents that your God, who created you, he loves you enough that he would leave heaven, come down to earth, to live a sinless life and offer it to you. So that he can say, no matter what you've done, no matter what you've become, my grace is forgiven. And so what you see everybody else doing week after week, we come down the center aisles, we turn down the sides of these different self-serve stations, we just pick up a piece of bread to be reminded that his body was crucified on a cross as a sacrifice for me. His blood was shed as a cleansing, as a covering for me. And so all the guilt or shame you may feel for not helping anybody in this moment, God's like, don't worry about that. This message isn't about regret for what you have or haven't done. This message is about a repentance where you change the way you live and the kind of person you become from this day forward. So this set represents, don't worry about your past anymore. Just take the message and decide how you're going to live from this day forward.
Thank you for listening to the Essential Church Podcast. Let me encourage you to pause for a moment and reflect on what you've heard. It's not the hearing of the word, but the application that makes all the difference.